Loud Nation.
You're invited to take your seat.
Take a seat.
At the Warriors Roundtable.
It's a three. In and out. Rebound. Peyton. Out to Curry. Let's it fly. Three ball. Left corner pocket.
Welcome to the table. The exclusive home of your Golden State Warriors. 95-7 the game.
Curry fires away. Three ball. Above the break.
Here's Kevin Dana.
Right there.
And Gary St. Jean.
What up, ladies and gentlemen? We welcome you to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana, Gary St. Jean, rocking with you from Seis de Siete here on 95.7. Reminding you that the Warriors 2023-24 season is presented by Kaiser Permanente. A lot to get to. Warriors have been busy over the last few days, the last 9 days since we've been on the air, and we will start with the most immediate game, the loss to Dallas last night, and also taking your calls all hour long, 888-957-9570. So, look, you go into the Dallas game last night, and if Golden State was, say, 38-26 going into that game instead of 34-30, you don't have Stephen Curry, you don't have Draymond Green, you can just kind of chalk that up as, all right, cool, move on. Doesn't hurt us at all. The problem is you needed to win three in a row against Dallas to get the tiebreak. And we're going to talk more about the Western Conference standings as the broadcast goes on. But, like, this would have been a loss that you could kind of just, like, not look at if the Warriors were, say, 4 or 5 games better than what they are right now. But unfortunately, they're not at that point where they could afford to drop games. You can't expect to win without Steph and Draymond. They gave it a go last night, Saint, but there's another team that they no longer have the tiebreaker against.
Well, the tiebreakers are fun to look at, but at the end of the day, you just didn't play well offensively. I thought the effort was there. I thought they worked really hard. They were even on the glass. But, you know, when you shoot the percentages they did on the three and the two, and you don't find many nights the Warriors get out assisted. They had like 29 assists, and I'm looking at Dallas and I'm saying 30 assists. I thought Kyrie was terrific. And
he was.
Special, I'll use that word. And you know, Luka came up with a little hamstring issue. He's not playing tonight against OKC, but you know, when you look at Dallas, there's a dramatic change there with Lively and Gafford and Washington. Just getting that length, and then you allow those two great players offensive freedom, and those other guys take care of the paint. Dallas is tough. Now, I'm not telling you they're a real good defensive team, but you're not going to want to play them early. But I had no qualms with their effort. I'm looking for them to bounce back. And we're going to talk a lot about this Laker game Saturday, and it's a big, big game. Get into the tiebreaker stuff and all that. But these are big games.
Yeah, no, they really are. And to your point, I'm with you, Sane. I thought the effort was really there. I mean, they hung tough. They defended pretty well despite Dallas shooting 54% from the field. I did think they defended rather well for good chunks of the game. But to me, it always felt like Dallas was on the verge of busting it open. Because to me, the Warriors could have, should have lost that game by 20 points last night. You know, it's a credit to the guys playing hard. And Dallas starting 1-17 from three. And then once Dallas started to hit from three, good night.
Well, you know, Dallas to me is a team that is different than the other teams because Luka's so ball dominant and he's the director of everything. And then when Irving steps it up, you know, you got Batman and Robin, then they're really tough. But you know, when you look at our guys, they didn't have their best shooting nights, but they had good looks. You know, I don't have a lot of qualms with the game. You know, those games happen on the road. Tip your hat to the other team, and you move on to L.A., and, you know, that's going to be a fun game.
It's going to be a fun game. I do want to talk a little bit about Daniel Gafford, though. You mentioned him. I mean, he and P.J. Washington coming over around the trade deadline, and they're both starting for Dallas now. And look, Daniel Gafford, 33 straight makes, which is incredible. It's two off Wilt Chamberlain's record. He had seven blocks last night. A big reason why Golden State was shot just 48% in the paint, as opposed to Dallas being 34 of 45, which is well above 70%. That is that's above 75% in the paint. And that's also a huge difference. And Gafford, on both sides of those numbers, the paint percentage for Dallas offensively and defensively, you could look directly to Daniel Gafford.
Well, you're going to get paint points off of dribble penetration and then passes into the paint or offensive rebounds. And, you know, this young guy, he caught my eye because I've watched Washington a few times and I didn't know a lot about him. But what an amazing feat to be in this situation. I'm old enough to remember watching Wilt, and he was so dominant. And this guy is just the recipient of the play of the Luka and the other guys in there. And good for him. You know, you go to your strengths, stay the heck away from your weaknesses. And he's getting everything around the rim and finishing there. And he's got good hands, good quick hops, and good for him.
All right, let's head out to the phone lines. We got Gabe in Lafayette. If you want to hit us up, 888-957-9570. What's going on, Gabe?
Hey there, Kevin and Gary.
How's it going?
I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciated Kevin's broadcast of the games filling in for Tim Roy. Thank you so much. I grew up listening to Joe Tate in Cleveland, Ohio, and the Cavs broadcasts, and I was so excited by your description of the game. It was special. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Gabe. I mean, any chance I get to fill in for Tim Roy, who is a legend in the broadcasting business, is awesome. The Warriors have struck gold with their TV and radio broadcasting teams as far as play-by-play guys and analysts are concerned. You got Tom on the radio side, and Clint Ozebuki does a great job on TV. But I especially with Tim Roy and Bob Fitzgerald, they've both been awesome on the air and off the air personally to me, getting to share that road trip with Bob and Kalena. Joe McCarthy on the NBC Sports Bay Area side, they took me under their wing. But, yeah, no, thank you very much. I mean, it's always awesome to get a chance to do an NBA game. I will say this. You may love me, you may hate me, but you got to call me a winning play-by-play broadcaster. Gary, I've done 16 NBA games. I am 12-4, 11-4 with Golden State, and 1-0 with the Clippers. So I don't know what that says besides that I just win games.
Hey, Kev, wasn't that a beautiful compliment? I that's terrific. And I have a lot of respect for that gentleman because he's from the Cleveland area, and Joe Tate was a legendary broadcaster. Yeah. And I can go back to each city, whether it's Al McCoy in Phoenix, go all around. Jim Irwin, when the Bucks in the old days, there were great guys doing the radio, Johnny Most. Joe Tate was famous because if you did a pregame show, you know what he sent you for a little gift?
What?
He sent you two jars of jelly, raspberry and strawberry.
Nice.
Never forget that. Yeah. Big Joe Tate, great guy.
Big Joe Tate. Yeah, unfortunately, he passed away, I want to say, like 5 or 6 years ago. So I guess I'm showing my quote-unquote youth. One of the radio broadcasters, speaking of Cleveland, that really kind of enchanted me was John Michael, who's now their TV guy. He's a guy that I replaced Joe Tate after he passed away. But just like his energy and enthusiasm is a guy that I certainly draw from. And Tom McGinnis with the Philadelphia 76ers and Brian Seaman, now the LA Clippers TV guy, used to be their radio guy. But yeah, a lot of good broadcasters around the NBA. A couple of other things I want to touch on with respect to the Dallas game, and yes, we are going to talk about the Lakers game because that's a huge one going up. First thing, just, you know, offensively, obviously it wasn't there. If you don't have Steph and Draymond, we talk about how good defensively Draymond is in his three-point percentage, but just how much of a hub he is used as offensively. If you don't have him and Steph out, it's going to be tough to win. Then you combine that with Clay and CP3 having off shooting nights. Just there are too many dominoes that fell in the opposite direction for Golden State to win that game.
Yeah, without a doubt. And when you get two of your best players not playing, you're not making excuses. This goes on during the whole course of the 82-game season with everybody, and just keep moving forward. But those are the law of averages, and it's tough to make up for those guys. There's certain things that they bring to the game that nobody else can bring, and that's just the way it is.
And then let's talk a little Jonathan Kuminga before we get to the break, because, I mean, Kuminga had a little bit of a cold stretch, I want to say like in February heading into the All-Star break, where he really rose up the scouting report for other teams, and so he got more defensive attention. But recently he's been really good, 20-plus in 7 of his last 9 games, and he's up north of 16 points per game this year, which I think is just huge, because he was at 12 points per game basically, somewhere in that range for like the first half of the season. And so what he's done since basically the talk he had with Steve Kerr after he came out in the media and said he no longer had faith in, you know, being able to develop into the player he thinks and we all think he can become. I mean, since that point, I mean, it is now we're talking about a 2-month sample size where outside of one little downturn, this guy has been awesome. And one thing that has really been good that Fitz pointed out last night on air, he's 34 of 38 from the foul line over his last 7 games, and up to 75% on the season.
Now, don't you love to watch the growth of a young player? It gets you excited. And we got to keep remembering he's 21 years old and doesn't have a wealth of experience. And he's figuring it out on the fly, and he's progressing, I think, in a beautiful fashion. There's room for growth on the defensive end, but he's got the athleticism to be special there. And when you have him and Wiggins, those are terrific athletes. And you and I have talked a lot about this. As an old coach, I just see a great athlete who could do better on the boards. I just think he could really make some real progress there. And the last thing, I love the way he's getting out on the break now, transition from defense to offense, and it kind of carries over to the half-court game where you're not catching and standing and taking a movie of the set here and what I'm going to do. Get moving, and I think that's the trademark of this team with Steph Curry and Steve Kerr, that you move the ball and you move people, and I think he's really getting a nice feel for example, he's on a wing and there's a teammate up by the elbow and you cut off of him and the ball's on the other side of the floor. Well, if he moves hard and changes gears, he is really, really a problem for the other team because of that great athleticism.
Yeah, I mean, just 4 rebounds last night to your points, 4.8 boards per game on the season. Folks, we're coming up on a break. Before we do break, we want to let you know that the WNBA is coming to the Bay Area. The WNBA Golden State team will begin play in the 2025 WNBA season at Chase Center. Get first access to season tickets for this historic season. Place a deposit at warriors.com/WNBA today. We'll take a break. Come on back. Talk about the Spurs win and the Spurs loss, and look ahead to the Lakers right here on 95.7 The Game.
If you've just joined us, don't worry. We saved your seat.
Sit down.
Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down.
At the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
Curry behind the back. Wade stops it. Pops on the way. Ridiculous three on the right sideline.
Now, here's Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean.
Luis Miguel is coming to San Francisco on April 11th. Don't miss his 2024 tour live at Chase Center. Get your tickets now at ChaseCenter.com. What up, folks? You're tuned in to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. If you want to talk with Gary St. Jean or myself, hit us up. 888-957-9570. All right, so prior to the loss to the Dallas Mavericks on Wednesday, played a couple of games against the San Antonio Spurs, one that was impressive, one that was the opposite of impressive. Let's start with the win Monday over San Antonio, and Trayce Jackson-Davis with one of the probably three best highlights of the season for Golden State. You probably think Stephen Curry off the inbounds from Brandon Pajemski to beat the Phoenix Suns. That's got to be in that top three. But this one is right up there. His dunk over Victor Wembanyama to basically ice the game was huge, and he had a really good game in that one. 13 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, a plus 20 off the bench, and again, the dunk that ended the game, Saint.
Boy, I love that. That was fun. I got probably watched it 5 times. That's how impressed I was with it. And you know, that young man plays, doesn't smile a lot, just goes out there and does his work. And again, I love watching a young player grow, and he's doing a great job. And I think we're seeing the start of a young guy having a heck of a career. He's got a bright future. He's just going to get better and better because he stays within himself. He's got good hands. He's a good pick-and-roll player. He finishes at the rim well. He's contesting shots because he's probably your biggest guy out there, and sometimes gets fouls, but you know, you don't want him to be standing around and not being aggressive. And he runs the floor well, and I think a team defender, he's solid. So there's a lot of growth that we've seen, and he's earned minutes in the rotation, and good for him.
Yeah, and I mean, you talked about it a little bit. I mean, he's providing real rim protection. Had a big block against Derek Lively last night. I mean, yeah. Those two rookie bigs. If it wasn't for Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama, we'd be talking a lot more about the play of Derek Lively and Trayce Jackson-Davis as two rookie bigs that are having great seasons. And then the Milwaukee game. I mean, he blocked Giannis twice on the same possession.
Amazing.
That was huge.
You know, I always talk about this in terms of feel. You can't teach timing either. There's some guys that got lead in their shoes. They just can't get off the floor and reading the play. And then there's other guys that just have a quick hop and read plays very, very well. And, you know, he's got that. And it's a gift. You know, his dad was a heck of a player, and he just understands the whole situation.
Yeah, and I do want to give some props to Mike Dunleavy, GM for Golden State.
Oh, boy.
Not necessarily for him taking him 57th overall. Well, yeah, taking Trayce Jackson-Davis. But, like, honestly, he probably could have gone in the mid-30s, mid to late 30s. But Mike Dunleavy offered what other NBA teams apparently at that point in the draft weren't, which was a guaranteed roster spot, a guaranteed full roster contract, as opposed to a two-way contract. You come to training camp and see if you get one of the 15 spots or not. And that played a role in him being able to drop to 57. Now, I will say, I've said this before, I looked at 5 mock drafts the day of the draft, and I believe Trayce Jackson-Davis was in the first round in 4 of 5 of those, or maybe even all 5. So he was considered a guy that was going to go in the 20s, and then once he slipped out of the first round, then you're talking about teams trying to, you know, get guys on two-way contracts, you know, save a little money, that kind of thing. But Golden State, Mike Dunleavy, and the Warriors wanted to offer him a full contract, and that's why they were able to get him at 57, or at least one of the major reasons why.
Well said. That to me was a heck of a bold statement by saying, hey, we're going to take you down here, but we're also going to have you on the team. I mean, at a draft pick that low. And yeah. I told you that a lot of food is consumed in the draft rooms.
Yes.
And maybe some of those teams were eating bad food or they fell asleep on their picks, because for the life of me, I still cannot figure out how the heck this guy dropped that far. But I just tipped my hat to Mike Dunleavy. I just, you know, he's an old Warrior guy when I was GM, and just think the world of him. And 2 great picks in your first draft. That just speaks volumes. Just terrific.
Yeah, I mean, he really knocked it out of the park with both Pods and TJD. Now, I got to ask, I remember you gave the answer, but I need a refresher. When you were in those draft war rooms in Oakland, did you have the same spread every year? What was the food spread?
Oh, no, that switched up. Now, you know, okay. Oh, boy. Well, you know, we always probably had a nice salads and some beef and some chicken and I was big on chocolate chip cookies. Those were very, very important. And it was amazing. You know why you ate so much? Nerves.
Yeah.
You're nervous. I mean, you know, I watch guys, you're pacing around a room and you're saying, what are they going to do? And you're looking at the next pick and all that kind of thing. And it's really quite a day. And, Kev, it looks like they're going to maybe go to 2 days.
Yes.
So that's 2 days of eating.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, with that said, I'd go away, go home, and I'm like, I was just like mentally exhausted. But you have great memories, because when you hit it, when you really feel like you had a heck of a draft, that's a great feeling, because you're building a foundation for your team. So it's quite a happening, and as we like to say, a lot of groceries.
Now, would you prefer 1 or 2 day draft?
Oh, I think this 2 day concept is good, because you're taking your time, and you know, you're not in a rush, and maybe you're going to have a little bit more time, because that second round, that flies, with the time factor. And gosh, and I'll take you all the way back. We had 10 picks in the old days, in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And my gosh, I'll tell you what, I told you the story about Nelly. He'd take off after the third round. He'd be over at Victor's playing Pac-Man on me. And he said, you got it. And 1 year, I think I told you the story, we drafted Mario Elie in the 9th or 10th round. And the reason we took him is he played at American International College, which is in Springfield, Massachusetts. And Brian Winter's friend, Jimmy Powell, was the coach there. And he's now a scout with Indiana. And they all liked him, and I remember seeing him play against Manute Bol, who played at Bridgeport. So, crazy things happen. Man. Larry Brown was notorious. He'd draft his manager.
Really?
Oh, yeah. When he went from college maybe to Kansas, back to the NBA, he'd draft some manager.
Man, you know, there was a story that Larry Brown almost became the Stanford men's basketball head coach right after Trent Johnson, and I would have been his head manager. Ah, just to think, if he got back to the NBA, maybe I would have been drafted. Oh, that was my ticket to the NBA right there. Oh, just slipped through the cracks. But let's get back to San Antonio. They had to have that game on Monday, because I mean, there's no other way around it. It was a really, really bad loss on Saturday at home, losing by 13 to the Spurs in a game that, quite honestly, Saint, they were out of, or not out of, but not really threatening the entire second half.
Well, you know what's interesting? I looked at those two games and just compared them. And, you know, you got San Antonio was making all kinds of shots. Just they're on fire. And, you know, you give a team a belief, and the next thing you know, you got some guy who's lighting it up, and you can't cool him off. And that, you know, that two games in the Chicago game, I had penciled in for wins. I'm going to admit to you. And, you and I have talked about this. You got to give credit. These are NBA players. And when they're having a good night individually and collectively, you can beat anybody. And, but the team going down there, and Wembanyama comes back, and Vassell comes back, and you're saying, holy moly, they may beat the Warriors twice in a row, and yet the Warriors rose up and did a heck of a job.
Yeah, that's why these games aren't played on paper, right? If you looked at the San Antonio roster that was at Chase Center, without two of their best players, certainly their best player, Victor Wembanyama, then there's an argument to be made for Devin Vassell to be their second best player, or at least one of their four or five best. And you look at that roster and say, oh, the Warriors are going to win this game by 20. They lose by 13, then you say, oh, Wemby and Vassell are coming back? Oh, the Warriors are going to lose by 20 if they lost to them by 13. Transitive property doesn't work in sports, and you mentioned it, they're NBA players, and if you give NBA players, NBA wings, wide open threes, they're going to hit them. And I mean, San Antonio started that game on Saturday like 17 to 29 from three. I think they've missed their last four by the time by the time the game was basically over, they cooled off. But, I mean, Julian Champagny's an NBA player. Keldon Johnson has won an Olympic gold medal. Like, these are guys who can produce at the highest level. And if other guys aren't in the lineup, you have plenty of guys who are more than capable of stepping up. I mean, in my view, I think between the G League, between the NCAA, between EuroLeague and other leagues around, you probably have another 300 to 400 guys in the world who are good enough to play in the NBA. Maybe not be superstars, but be guys who could be at the end of a bench and contribute in spot situations. And look, and so the guys who are in the NBA are even that much more capable.
I think that's a very fair statement. And the game has changed so much, you know. In the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, there was so much more post play. And now the three ball has just revolutionized the game. And if you got guys that can shoot the ball, and that's, I think the Warriors maybe can tip their hat and say we were a big factor in this whole thing, the way they play. They get out there and they move the ball and they move people and they create good shots for each other. And you know, that's the way it is now in the NBA. As we're talking, I'm watching Boston drill Phoenix.
Yeah.
And they've got to have at least 20, low 20s in terms of numbers of threes. And it's been the entire difference in the game. And, you know, three-point shooting is a big, big key. And, you know, who better to say it than Steph Curry and Klay Thompson?
Yeah, to your point, Saint, the Boston Celtics in this game are 24 of 47 from downtown.
Holy moly!
I mean, yeah, so the Suns are 39% from three in this game, which is really good, and they're minus 39 points from beyond the arc.
There's some nights where you just, you know, you're on the road and you say, it's hard winning an NBA road game. It really, really is. And you're saying to yourself, and it's the same thing with the Warriors. Let's say you go on a long trip. Your first game back is tough. Just getting acclimated. And you say to yourself, you're Phoenix, well, maybe we're going to have a shot tonight. And the next thing you know, there's a barrage hitting you upside the head.
Yeah, I mean, this was a five-point game at the half, and then Jaylen Brown just detonated on them. But, let's talk a little bit about the Warriors-Lakers game coming up, because the Warriors are set to get Stephen Curry. It looks like they are, I mean, it hasn't been official yet. Of course, they're going to reevaluate Steph on Friday. But the whole idea with Steph practicing with the Santa Cruz Warriors in San Francisco this week is that he would be available for the game on Saturday in Los Angeles. If they could get Stephen Curry and Draymond back for the Lakers, I mean, that's obviously going to give you a chance. But I do want to talk a little bit about kind of the injury aspect. And, you know, I feel like we talk about, oh, well, this team hasn't had its full squad available in X number of games, this or that. You hear this all across the league. Well, they've just had injuries. But, like, when's the last time a team had its starting five play all 82 games, right? Like, we talk about this team not having its full squad for so much of the season, but how often is it that really everyone from 1 to 15 or 1 to 18, if you include the two-way guys, are healthy? Like, that rarely happens. So you have to expect that these injuries are going to happen, and it's not just like some dumb luck. This is professional basketball. These guys are playing 82 games. They're playing, you know, sometimes three games in four nights. Like, this happens.
You know, Kev, you get some guys that are just extremely durable. For whatever reason, they just don't get hurt. I'll go back to a guy who I was with the Nets, Buck Williams. Just played 82 every single year. And some guys had that thing about them, and other guys, it's true, are injury prone. And, with that said, that's why you have to have depth. And I think that's when I look at the Warriors, I like the look of their team right now. I like the rotation. I like the starters. It just feels good to me. And I think this game Saturday, if you know, the guys can play, those two guys, it's going to be a heck of a game. That's going to get a big, big rating because you got these mega stars playing. And, when I look at that team, you know, Davis, he kind of bowls with the wind, but he's so big. And you know, he's going to be he's a tough challenge, say, for Draymond. And that's why, you know, Davis comes on the scene. And then, you know, LeBron, tip your hat to him. He's been absolutely fantastic. But, you know, you look at Russell, and I can't figure it out. He was on fire for a couple weeks. In the last couple games, he's been absolutely horrendous. And, yeah, you know, you need a third guy to step up. And then I look at the rest of the team. You know, Hashimoto's playing well. You know, so I like their team, but I'm gonna share a Nelly thing with you.
Okay, share it.
If my team is small and good and your team is big and good, I'm going to take the small team every time. And especially in today's game. You know, back in the old days, that was kind of lunacy if you were going to do that, because now you're so small. But now, today, you can do it. And why can you do it? Because you got a gang rebound. And I just love what the Warriors have done playing small. They're one of the top three rebounding teams in the entire league. They've improved so much from last year. And that's a beautiful thing. That's a component to help you win.
Yeah, and you talk about gang rebound. Warriors, as you mentioned, one of the best rebounding teams in the NBA. I don't think they have a single guy that has more than 7 rebounds per game, right? It isn't just like an Andre Drummond kind of guy who, back when he was with the Detroit Pistons, was gobbling up 15 rebounds a game, that kind of thing. It's the gang rebounding. I mean, Looney, when he's in the rotation, he's good for 6. Brandon Podziemski gets you almost 6 rebounds a game. Steph is good for 4 or 5. Andrew Wiggins, Jonathan Kuminga are good for 4 or 5 rebounds. It's just, you look up and down the roster, and you have everyone that is chipping in on that end of the floor to make up for the missed shots. So, yeah, no, that is a great point you bring up. Now, I'm hoping that this is a good game on Saturday, because Crypto.com has been a house of horrors for the Warriors, saying, I mean, dating back to November of 2021, the Warriors have lost 11 straight games in that building, playing the Lakers and Clippers behind. Their last win was against the Clippers there, November 28th, 2021. So last time they won, this version of the Warriors, the Steve Kerr Warriors, still had just 3 NBA titles.
You know, you shared that with me today, and I had to read that twice. That blew my mind. I had absolutely no idea that was the case. And, you know, it is a different place to play in. And, you know, you and I talked about Madison Square Garden. Well, when you go to L.A., it's like, you know, going to a Broadway play or there's a big concert. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that the lighting is there. It is different. They really darken, and the Knicks do that. They darken the seated area, so it's all featured right on the court. And does that change your depth perception? You know, it's possible. You know, unless you get to shoot on an arena, an NBA arena, like I was thinking of the kids, young guys playing in the high school and the girls in the state championship, and they were playing up at Sacramento.
Yeah.
And invariably the scores are in the 40s or 50s because they can't make perimeter shots because it's such a difference.
Yeah. I don't like the lighting personally. What do you think of it?
I don't care for it, but, you know, you know what? It's L.A.
It's Hollywood.
That's the way I look at it. Exactly right.
Yeah, but I mean, they absolutely, you know, lighting, no lighting, house of horrors or not, they're going to need Steph and Draymond. Hopefully those guys are available. I mean, how would you defend Anthony Davis and LeBron James? Like, how do you go about trying to curtail their production? Are you just hoping that D'Angelo Russell has an off night and say, you know, it's an all-you-can-eat D'Lo kind of game, or how do you game plan for that?
Well, with LeBron, I'm not letting the cat out of the bag. You want him to beat you over the top, which means you're loosening up, trying to take away his right hand, but you know that he's just a locomotive when he gets going down the floor. But if he starts making threes, that's what you're challenging him to do. And with Davis, You know, he's a big that's not dominant, say, on the box. He's got a good turnaround jumper on the left box to his right shoulder to the baseline. But where he's so dangerous is in the paint. He is so long. He's amazing. I mean, his finishing around the rim is really, really special. And so there isn't any secrets there with him. And on the other side, at the other side of the coin with Russell, just take note of his quick release when he catches.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he just fingertip touch and it's going up. I just look at their team like, you know, I think you can attack Reeves and Russell. I don't think they're really good defenders. And I think you can get out in the open floor on them, and they are big. And I think you can beat them in a transition game. And obviously, you want to try to get Davis involved in pick and roll action, because we've talked about what we call drop coverage. He doesn't come up to the level of the pick. He drops down way below it. So with a guy like Steph Curry, you salivate, because when you come off of a good screen, you might be wide open. And that's what they try to do, is to get him involved in that kind of action.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Davis cannot play drop coverage against Stephen Curry. I mean, though Steph has had some shooting struggles at Crypto.com, but we're going to talk more after the break about just kind of the tiebreaker implications. I know, Gary, that you're not as big on the tiebreaker thing as I am, but look, both of these teams have 31 losses. This is obviously a huge, huge game, one of two remaining between the Lakers and the Warriors. But we do have to take a break first. Before we do head to that break, we want to let you know to join us live at Chase Center on Monday, March 18th, as the Warriors take on the New York Knicks, presented by State Farm. All fans get a Warriors splash towel coming to that game. Get your tickets now at Warriors.com or call 888-GSW-HOOP. Representatives are standing by. It's time for a timeout. When we come back, we're going to touch up a little more on the Warriors-Lakers matchup. We're going to take a look at the Western Conference standings, the playoff outlook, the play-in outlook for Golden State. And we'll take a look at an upcoming homestand where the Warriors got to be better than 500, which has been kind of where they've been all season at home. See if they can ramp it up at Chase when they return home next week, starting with that game against the Knicks. Taking your calls as well, 888-957-9570. We will be coming right back right here on 95.7 The Game.
Each and every member of Dub Nation has a seat at this table.
If everybody would please take your seats.
The Warriors Roundtable has returned on 95.7 The Game.
Knocked it down straight out! For about 28 feet.
Now back to Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean.
What's up, folks? You're tuned in to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana, Gary St. Jean with you, taking your calls all hour long. And by all hour long, I mean for the next 10 to 11 minutes now, because our hour is coming to a close. Before we do send it away and talk a little more about the Western Conference standings, we want to let you know about the upcoming broadcast presented by Ticketmaster. The Warriors taking on the Lakers Saturday in La La Land. 5 p.m. airtime, 5:30 tip time, with Tim Roy on the call to wrap up the three-game roadie, the Texas two-step, and the jaunt down to L.A. Then they're home for three starting Monday against the New York Knicks. 6:30 airtime, 7 p.m. tip time, presented by State Farm. Also, there'll be an all-female crew on the TV side. You got Jenny Kavnar leading the broadcast on that one. My former broadcast partner, Zena Cata, will be on the call. Kylan Mills will also be involved. Kareth Burke. LaChyna Robinson, big hitter from ESPN, will, I believe, be the color analyst. Jane Appel Marinelli will also be involved in that. So really cool to watch all them do their thing. Then the, by the way, that Monday game presented by State Farm. Wednesday against the Memphis Grizzlies. One of the worst losses this season. MLK Day in Memphis, 6:30 on the air. 7 p.m. tip time, presented by Johnson Controls. Then Friday, wrapping up the three-game homestand against the Pacers, 6:30 airtime, 7 p.m. tip time. That is Latino Heritage Night, presented by Modelo. Then they're back on the road to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves. 3:30 airtime, sans Cat, because he has gotten injured, unfortunately. with the meniscus, but 3:30 airtime, 4 p.m. tip time. You can listen to all those games here on 95.7. So let's take a look about the Western Conference, looking up and down the standings. And look, this Lakers game is going to be huge. They have four games left against the two teams directly ahead of them in the standings, in the Lakers and the Dallas Mavericks. Right now, the Mavericks, actually, they're in seventh because the Suns just lost. So the Suns dropped to eighth, but you know they're tied for seventh with the Phoenix Suns. So they're 3.5 back of the 7 and the 8, 4 back of the 6-seeded Sacramento Kings. So you got four games against a team that you are a game behind and 3.5 games behind. If you're thinking about trying to get up to 6, I mean, you almost have to win all of them, Saint, but you have to win, the first things first, you have to win both of these games at Crypto if you want the tiebreaker, which, look, is could very well come into play because both these teams are at 31 losses, and if this comes down to a 9-10 game, considering how poorly the Warriors have performed at Crypto.com over the last 2.5 years, you'd much rather have that 9-10 game be a Chase Center.
I think it's paramount. I think it's huge. Then there comes your tiebreaker. But, you know, I think there's a big psychological difference, and the fans are going to be fired up. That will be out of the whole NBA. If they wind up 9-10, that'll be the best opening game that we have in the playoffs for 2024. No debate. Yep. Now, can they move up? Yes, they can. I think Dallas will lose tonight to OKC without Luka. So I think you're right on in what you're saying. The top four are pretty well locked, and we think Denver will probably be first. And I just can't give enough praise to OKC. But when I get to 5, the Pelicans have surprised me. They've done a good job. They really have. They're just been really solid. Murphy and Jones, to me, are just really quality starters for them. And then you move down to the Kings, and they've had some hiccups against sub-500 teams, but then they turn around and bounce off Milwaukee the other night. So they're doing a heck of a job. Sabonis and Fox, great years. I see them firm in 6. So now we get down to the two teams you're talking about, Dallas and the Suns. Dallas has a much easier schedule than the Suns. Now, again, that 7-8 thing, if you win that game, you move on. You play getting ready for playing number 2. But then if you lose that game, you're going to play the winner of 9-10. And we talked about the importance of playing at home. Well, the second game you'd have to play on the road if you win the first game. And so it's a tall task. But I'll say it again, if the Warriors are healthy and they're playing well, if I'm these other teams, I wouldn't want to play them.
There's no way
I would want to play them because I think they're so capable of pulling an upset here. And just give them some momentum of a couple of wins, Kev, and then they get in a playoff series, and maybe they split the first two games on the road, and then they come back home and win a couple, and then all of a sudden you're saying, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no. So I want to break this down a little bit, but first I want to hear from Steve Kerr. Lucas, if you got it, CG78. Steve Kerr was talking about on if the schedule is too daunting to make a run. Get your response from what he says, Steve, and then I got some numbers I want to break down with you after we hear from Steve.
No, you can't worry about it. I mean, we look at them every day, obviously, but there's nothing we can do about that. But, you know, the season, it really is a marathon. And at any point in the season, you know, you rattle off 10 wins in a row, and then, you know, that matters, whether it's in the beginning or the end, it doesn't matter. And I still have no doubt that this team can get on a great run and make a good push.
I agree with Steve. It's tough. It's a marathon, and there's momentum that's involved when you're playing at a high level. You're on the road and you win one. Bring on the next one. Let's go. So you know what? This team has a history of that kind of play, and I'm looking for them to get a win Saturday and have carryover, as you noted, that 3-game home series. there's very winnable games there. But you said it. Last year, a dominant home record. I mean, just terrific. And this year has not been that good. 500 is not good enough in your home court. I shared with you the magic that coaches look at. 500 on the road and win 30 at home, and all of a sudden you got a 50-win season, and you're going to have a home seed in the playoffs.
Yep. So basically, this is what it would take for the Warriors to finish in six. Right now, the Sacramento Kings are at a 585 win percentage. They're the number six seed. They're at 38-27. They have 17 games left. If they go 10-7, that's 588 win percentage over your last 17. So you can safely assume that they would go there's a good chance they're going to be 48-34, or that the sixth seed is going to be 48-34, or that would be the bar that the Warriors need to clear. They don't have the tiebreaker with the Mavericks. They don't have it with the Suns. They don't have it with the Kings. If they don't sweep the Lakers, they won't have it with them. So they essentially need to go 49-33, which means they need to go 15-2 the rest of the way if they want to get to six. Not impossible, but highly improbable when you consider you have road games left, two against the Lakers at a place where you've really struggled as of late, another road game against the Mavericks, another game against the Timberwolves on the road, and road games against Miami and Orlando back to back. So they would need to go like 4-2 in those six road games and win out otherwise to get to six. But if you can get at least to eight and give yourselves a shot to get the seven seed by that 7-8 play-in, I think that's kind of the more realistic goal. I think like 46-36 could get you to eight, which means going 12-5, which I think if everyone's healthy is very doable for that team. Because like you mentioned, Sate, I think Denver's going to finish number one, and I do not want to face the Denver Nuggets in the first round. I'd much rather face the Oklahoma City Thunder or Minnesota Timberwolves, teams that do not have a lot of playoff experience, or in the case of the Thunder, have zero playoff experience. Going up against my vets, I like those chances.
Totally agree with you there. I think if you're any of those lower teams, those are the two teams you want to play. The Clippers, if they're healthy, are darn good. And that, you know, I don't know if they're going to be 4-5 or, you know, what they're going to wind up as. But Denver seems to really be hitting their stride. And, you know, you gave some numbers that are, tough to get to. But at the end of the day, if you could get up there to eight, that would be fantastic. But we'll see what happens. It's, you know, if we always said this too, if you play four or five games in a week, if you can win three out of five every week, you're gonna have a very good record. And this is what they've got to string together now. Let's get Steph healthy. Let's get all the other guys playing at an optimum level, and they're gonna be able to make some noise.
Yeah, 600 ball, that's basically 50-32 for a season. Again, that magic number 50, which is still mathematically possible for Golden State. To get to 50 wins, they would need to go 16-1 the rest of the way. Well, that will do it for us today, folks. A big thank you to Lucas Alexander and his USC Trojans out on the men's side of the Pac-12 men's basketball tournament bracket. A rough showing, if we might say, this morning against Arizona. But the women's team is going to be a one seed in the NCAA tournament, almost likely, with Juju Watkins. They can make a Final Four run. Lindsey Gottlieb just has done a fantastic job there in Troy. So big thank you to Lucas Alexander behind the glass, Marika Kleto, and R.C. Davis on the Warriors side. For the Saint, Gary St. Jean, I'm Kevin Dana saying sayonara. We will talk to you next Tuesday on Warriors Roundtable right here on 95.7 The Game.
You've been listening to the Warriors Roundtable.
Curry brings it through, one hand, three, up and good!
On the exclusive home of your Golden State Warriors.
That playful and nailed it!
95.7 The Game.
For tickets, call 888-GSW-HOOP.